Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Simon Barrett, and this is another in our ongoing series of the Week in Reviews, a chance to sit down one-on-one with someone in the literary world. My guest today is author Richard Wanderer. He has just published a wonderful novel, The Holiday Party. He explores the often career-breaking situation when corporations collide. Richard, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Simon. It's very nice to be here.
It is a great book. I loved it. I loved every page of it. But before we delve into the book, let's start with a little bio. Who is Richard Wanderer?
Well, Richard Wanderer, that's me, spent over 50 years of my life working in New York City and Los Angeles for major national magazines and some newspaper chains. And currently, I still do work as an independent contractor for a national magazine, which is nothing like the one that I wrote about. It's a very fine publication that's actually a nonprofit, so it's a little different. And later in life, while raising a family and working full-time, I became a lawyer and a member of the California Bar, so these things helped me in my decision to write this novel.
I'm going to ask you about that a little bit later. Without giving away any spoilers, boy, I mean, I hate it when authors give spoilers about a novel. But what is the broad outline of the plot to the book?
Well, I think the broad outline would be that a very solid family-owned national magazine that happened to be very employee-friendly is taken over by a huge media conglomerate, which immediately puts in its own systems, which are very heavily draconian thrift, is the bottom line. And where people had felt it was wonderful to go to work every day, and as you know, when you work for a company, often the word is, we do this and we do that, and the people really mean it. But then suddenly this group comes in and they change everything around, and they end up doing the wrong things in terms of sustaining what would be a great publication. And intrigue in there is the fact, too, that when there's a takeover, sometimes, too, that there are people with great ambitions who will actually try and take the business over from themselves away from the takeover company. So these are sort of like plots within plots.
Oh, it's a delightfully twisted tale. Where did you get the idea for the holiday party? Where did it come from?
Well, it came from all the experiences that I've had working for many publications. I've more or less put together an amalgamation of characters and scenarios that I've run into. I think you read the book. There's one character in there who's the Mr. Ballard, who's the head of the Ballard Media Group, who announces to people when he's very busy, quote, I'm up to my ass in midgets, you know. Well, I actually knew a publisher like that, you know, who would use that as a phrase. So that these are things, or somebody I knew who would have clocks of all parts of the world up in their office to give the idea of the fact that they are working for something of an international nature. And I think, too, that I met characters that are more personally ambitious for themselves than they are for the team that they're working for. And these are kinds of people that I put in there. I think also, too, You note too that I had an element of the Wicca religion in underlying the story, and the reason I did is in the beginning I thought some of the people that I run into in life were so awful that, my God, maybe they're witches, you know, because the common belief, you know, that people unfortunately have. And then I did a lot of research on Wicca and found that it really is a naturalist religion that really has gotten a bad rap through the years, so that it's treated quite respectfully in the publication of my book.
I have to admit that it definitely brought a smile to my face, you know, the idea of, executives meeting in a, exclusive penthouse and, doing Wicca things. Usually you think of, Wicca as, people gallivanting naked in the woods.
Yes, yeah. Right, or it's often confused, unfortunately, for the people that practice it as devil worship, but it's got nothing to do with it, completely different. It was a naturalist religion that was around before a lot of major religions that we know today. And, it's not strange when you think of it, the different kinds of religions outside of the major ones that you hear about that people belong to and are executives in top companies, so... it's not impossible, it's plausible.
What made you decide to enter the world of writing?
Out here on the coast, there was an anchor by the name of Kelly Lang, and also she had a good friend, Walter Satterthwaite, who's a known writer too, and they conducted a seminar. I got a card, and I decided, I have some ideas, but it'd be nice to talk to people that, that have done this. And I went to a limited number of sessions on, I think it was Wednesday evening for maybe a couple of months, and then I must have taken about 3 years to recollect and go through notes and think about, a subject that was very close to my heart, and that is the fact that today there's tremendous, the word is almost thrown around, corporate greed. And what happens, of course, is that people work all their lives, for a company, and they do a good job, and they, in the hope, that they're going to be taken care of. And then all of a sudden, out of the blue, through leverage buyouts today plain sales or mergers, their lives are completely disturbed without any recognition at all to the harm that it can cause to families and people that believe, and have faith, in what they do. So I think I wrote this because of my strong feeling of this. And also, too, I was thinking back, when I was a boy, 6 years old in New York City, walking with my grandmother in the 80s area of the east side there. And my grandmother whispered in my ear, "See," and I looked and I saw somebody with there didn't have a refrigerator in those days. They had a place for an ice chest, and their blankets and their clothes all put out on the sidewalk. And she said these poor people were dispossessed. And that was during the Depression. And these are things, that stayed with me as an adult. How can people be so merciless, and so cruel? And yet this seeps into, I think, the people that, we talk about the top 1% that can't get enough, and they shed their stuff in the Cayman Islands and places like that. And you think of the harm that they cause to so many families. So I think that's my inspiration for writing the book.
I think that is just a fine definition. I remember it was decades ago. Video Killed the Radio Star was the first video broadcast on MTV. Magazines are some ways, magazines and newspapers are in some ways facing the same battle. The internet very much is killing the newspaper and magazine world. Can print survive?
You ask a great question there, Simon. I believe it can. I'll tell you why. Many magazines, going back to the days when television first came in very heavy in the United States in the early 60s, late 50s, big magazines like the Saturday Evening Post, which I once worked on, when it had 7 million circulation each week, and Life and Look, felt very challenged at that time. And what they did is they sold hundreds of thousands of subscriptions at bargain rate prices. They lost everything on the circulation. The business plan was to lose money on circulation, but get it back on advertising. And when this didn't happen, each one of them went out of business in the shape that they were in. Today, Life comes out, you know, for specials through Time Warner, and the Saturday Evening Post still exists, but it's a fraction of itself. It once had a huge circulation. I think it has maybe 600,000 on the newsstand every other month, something like that. Somebody picked it up because generations have never seen the Alexander Bott's tractor stories or the Norman Rockwell paintings or things of that nature, so that they have a whole treasure chest of that. But today, you've seen, for example, like you don't see U.S. News and World Report around except for specials, or Newsweek just folded their print edition and now they're looking for another buyer, or Business Week became Bloomberg when it was going under. But these are all magazines that when you look at there's an order called the Order Bureau of Circulations, which has recently changed its name to be more of an omnibus type of thing. But you look at the statements, you'll see, for example, that you analyze different factors and you see that certain magazines are not making money on circulation still, with the idea of getting it back on advertising. So what has happened is that smaller magazines, many of them, do well because they have a very strong newsstand sale, make money on that, and they're selling their subscriptions not at a bargain rate, and that's the important thing to do. Once you have a solid circulation, no matter how big it is, where you're making money on that, you don't have any problem in terms of keeping the magazine afloat, and then advertising would be gravy. But unfortunately, that's where the problem lies, except that today a lot of the big magazines are also going on the internet, and they have paywalls so that they're beginning to charge viewers for coming in and looking at, you know, the content, and also too they're developing their internet websites so that they have fresh editorial that can go along with what's in the magazine. So that would be the future for them. I think the thing is, you know, that magazines that are good and accepted have great believability. Like today, even a Good Housekeeping seal of approval, you know, that still rings true, and I think that people buy on things like that. And, yeah. But I think that there still is a future for it because there are billions of magazines that are sold in this country every year.
But is it sustainable? Yeah, that's really the question.
Well, I think as long as there are going to be trees in the forest, there are going to be magazines. I think that there's a group of deep readers that want to get great information, that they feel that, and they're willing to do that. And I think that as long as there's a profit there, you know, that you take, for example, some of the big corporations that are running magazines today, they may have two magazines that are not doing that well, but on the other hand, they have others that are still very profitable. So I think that, you know, the thing is, when television came in after radio. People said radio's dead, but people listen to radio, aren't they? You know, there's always a place, and there's always a thing that starts out very hot and heavy, and then levels down a little bit, and things are still there.
Well, my view is that if you have quality product, it will always sell.
You're right, absolutely. And the thing is that there again, you have to have in some of the business plans that the magazines have that could be in some jeopardy they more or less go out on the limb with very reduced circulation charges to their readers, and in the hopes of getting the money back on advertising. But getting advertising today is not what it used to be. It's very, very difficult to sell advertising space in this kind of a climate.
And in fact, let's bring up one of your characters in the book, Forrest. This was a character that had worked for the company for what?
Forrest Green.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep. He'd worked for the company for 30 years. He didn't cause them any grief. All he did was, do his thing. Thousands of miles away from New York. Is that the kind of situation that we now face, when corporations collide? We've got this guy, he does really good, let's screw him.
Well, the thing is, that they look for people in the, in the business department, in the department, say, for example, the ones that count the pennies, look for ways to save money. And a lot of these kind of people, really don't understand the business. So that they figure, that you suit up one guy, you can suit up another. Put them a new uniform to come out with a rate card and so forth, and they'll do the same job. But very often, sales are through relationships that are built up over time with people that come to trust the person and believe that the person is delivering what they say they're going to deliver. And I think a lot of the penny pinchers don't realize this. And I think you'll see this not only in the magazine business, but in all industry, where they think, that those that they're paying too much to somebody in light of what they think they should be paid, even though the person is getting a fraction of what they bring in, and they suddenly decide, that this is the way to go. Also, too, another thing, too, is age. I've heard, that when people are 50 and over, which is ridiculous, suddenly, the headhunters don't look to them as quickly as they would with somebody in their 30s and 40s. Of course, nobody gets old, the ones that are doing this. But the thing is, the sad thing is, these things happen, and they happen quite a bit every day.
I always assumed that the tale about being unable to find a job after you were age 50 was a fable. I've got this great resume. I've done all these things, but it's really not so. When you hit that 50 mark, you're essentially unemployable.
I'm afraid, that what you have to do today, I think in my generation, people work for the same company, and you heard about people did this and that, they stay with them for years. But things have changed so dramatically that today I think people are pushed into being into business for themselves, much more so than they were generations back. Don't you agree?
Oh, absolutely. I essentially walked away from corporate America about 5 or 6 years ago. I just had enough of it. I'm not rich, but I keep my head above water.
Mm-hmm. Listen, I think that's what we all have to do, to be able to do that. There's certainly wonderful benefits, working for a corporation. They take care of you while they're doing it. But the thing is, a lot of people suddenly find themselves in a situation where we do this and we do that, and suddenly it's you alone. You are there. People too. In my novel, I want to get across the point. People become so identified with the company that they're with that they lose their identity. They are. I work for CBS. I work for NBC. I work for this, that, the other thing, and it's we. But the thing is that when somebody finds himself all of a sudden unemployed, it's a shock. It's a standpoint that, well, what can I do? How can I continue? Well, the thing is, that people have to look back and things, all the skills that they have, what they've developed, and then try and become independent contractor for something. In that way, they can sustain themselves and keep their head above water. But it's hard. It's not easy.
Okay. I think it's time to break to an absolutely shameless commercial. Where can people buy copies of The Holiday Party?
Okay. It's got a long title. It's The Holiday Party, and then in brackets, A Tale of a Corporate Takeover, into brackets. And I have a website, one place. It's www.theholidayparty-atalesofacorporatetakeover.com. That's one thing. Or simply you can go to Amazon and buy it there, or go to BarnesandNoble.com and buy it there. Or you ask for a special order at any major bookstore, and you can order it that way. So there are a lot of ways you can get it.
And let me guess, if you go to Amazon and just put in Richard Wanderer,
it would come up eventually. Or you could put in The Holiday Party, in brackets, A Tale of a Corporate Takeover, and you get it right away.
It's a great title, by the way. It's very subtle. I thought, when I first looked at it, you were being very sarcastic. But in fact, it's a wonderful title. Would you like to discuss the difference between a Christmas party and a holiday party?
Yes, the sort of after all the chaos the takeover corporation causes to the people that were loyal and worked hard for the Gladstone magazine. One of the things they do is they. Gladstone people always had an industry-wide Christmas party, and everybody loved to come to it, all the different advertisers and that type of thing. But they changed the name to The Holiday Party, which in order to look politically correct to the outside world. And no matter what you call the party, it's the heart of the party, the fact that it's a thank you type of a party. And I really think that people don't have to feel, that they're being insulted if they aren't Christian, to go to a Christmas party, because people accept that, But the thing is that they go out of their way to look politically correct after all the terrible things they do to people, to the outside world. So I thought that that would be a good title for it.
Oh, I thought it was simply splendid. Yeah, I've lived through several corporate takeovers. Occasionally I've been the screwer, and occasionally I've been the screwy. But yeah, it was just fabulous the way you portrayed it.
Thank you. Yeah. I also wanted to, in the book, a lot of different, you know, subplots and so forth, but I think, too, you know, that I wanted to get across, too, how hard it is for people, you know, to dependent on this, and they're working good faith, and then suddenly something like this occurs to them, and I think that perhaps, you know, that a lot of people could empathize with their own lives, no matter what industry they're in, with what takes place in my novel. So,
you mentioned earlier the Wicca element.
Yeah.
What brought you to, you know, thinking that you needed to include it?
Well,
I mean, it's yeah. great. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah. Well, I thought, you know, that the kind of people that I ran into, some of them, you know, were so awful, you know, in the way they dealt with people, that, there must be something, you know, that different about them. And like many people, I didn't understand, you know, that Wicca religion, you know, is a naturalist religion, that it was, once I researched it, and I just thought that it would add an extra element of intrigue to the plot. And, you know, this one character, this Barbara Martinez Blessington, I thought it would be interesting to have her as sort of a person that was a member of the coven and that would, you know, pray to her goddess Diana, you know, for things to happen and so forth. And, you know, sort of, you know, give it a little different spin, you know, on it. Even though that there's nothing wrong, I think any religion where people believe in, you know, and doesn't hurt anybody else is fine, you know. But her own character was certainly wasn't exemplary of her own religion, really, you know. In the
right. I'm long in the tooth. Possibly you are longer in the tooth.
Yes, I am. Yeah.
I've read many books, and I've had the opportunity to talk to many authors. Rarely does an author create a character out of thin air. More often than not, a character is based on real people. It may be a melange. You know, mm-hmm. you take the best or worst traits of people you know and put them in the blender, and voila, a character emerges. Is that the technique you used?
I'm sure you know that I couldn't write out of thin air. I used my background, I used my imagination, and I used how I thought the people that I've met would react under certain circumstances, you know. So that certainly, I think, you know, that really fiction comes out of real life. It always has. The great writers, you know, of Dickens and that type of thing, you know, they all talked about their time, didn't they? And they talked about what transpired then, you know. And so today we have a sort of the Christmas Carol and things like that all came out of Charles Dickens' experiences. And so that I think that when you write a book, remember years ago there was this great movie called The High and Mighty, and it was written by somebody who had been a pilot, you know. So you have to, you write about what you know, and I think that's important.
So it would be fair to say that there are bits of reality in the book.
Yes, there are, but it's been fictionalized. To be able to write this book. Yes, I think too. There are things too that underlying in there. This Forest Green character, more or less, in his sort of like getting ready to depart, he went to the Human Resources Department. His lawyer advised him, that, and a lot of people don't realize this, but that the Human Resources people are also working for the same employer. So don't, confide in them to the degree, get your paperwork and go, I think, too, that with the Internet, which we mentioned earlier, that today somebody can go to something like glassdoor.com and be able to get the feelings that people have for actual feelings for the companies that they work for, so that somebody can get a heads up in terms of somebody takes over their company, what's coming in there, and the way that they treat their employees could well be the way that they're going to treat you, hopefully that they treat them well. I think people in the book, I think its character also went to an actuary with his paperwork and found out a magic phrase that got him more retirement than he thought he was going to get. That's
it. All right.
So another thing, too, that when you're dealing with corporations, you should not stand alone. That the corporations have very good legal systems and people there that are taking care of them, so that you'd be remiss, when you have a situation like that, not to, if you can't afford an attorney, go to the state bar in the state where you live. And they often have people that can help you, with a situation like that, because you really have to be prepared in case something happens. And the other thing is, too, is that people sometimes, when the new people come in, they make the mistake of confiding in the new people, but they may have agendas of their own. So you got to be very careful. So.
All right. Now, I'm guessing that you have been bitten by the writing bug. There are very few authors that I can think of that stop at one book. There was a guy several years ago who told me, nope, I'm done. I'm not going to write another word. And I think it was last year, I got an email from him. Okay, I'm working on the new book. books are more addictive than cocaine. Do you have something coming up next?
I really haven't done anything else but try to promote this book. If I did anything, it might be a book of short stories or something like that. But, I'd have to really give it thought, as to writing about another subject.
Not necessarily another subject, just another viewpoint.
You mean of the same thing? Well, it could be, but I don't have any immediate plans to do that. But believe me, if I change my mind, I'll let you know.
and I do hope you will. I'm looking at the clock. Pretty much we're flat out of time. But I do want to thank you for taking time to talk to us this afternoon. It has been wonderful, and I'm sure I speak for everyone at Blog Talk Radio and bloggernews.net in wishing you every success with the holiday party.
Well, thank you so much, Simon. It's been my pleasure to talk to you, and I appreciate the interview so much.
You can rest assured that you won't be resting easy. You'll be getting all sorts of emails from me.
Well,
what you're doing, what you're writing about.
Okay. Great. Good.
Richard, thank you so much for taking part today. And have a wonderful day. Have a wonderful week. Have a wonderful year.
And the same to you, Simon. And you have a great year, too. Okay. Take care.
Okay. Okay. Until next time, this is Simon Barrett wishing everyone a happy, safe day, week, whatever. We'll be back next week with another episode. Until then, goodbye.
Take care.